Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Hal Shurtleff with Camp Constitution. Welcome to our special luncheon event. We usually hold a monthly luncheon, but Jim wasn't available when we were scheduled. We did something else. But since he lives nearby, we were happy to have this special meeting. Before I do, I just want to mention our wonderful family camp that's coming up July 18th to the 23rd at the Signal Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center in Plainfield, New Hampshire. I've got some brochures and pamphlets if you'd like. If you take some with you and give some people you know, leave them around areas, maybe your churches or what have you. We already got about 40 people signed up, so it's pretty some new families. And we have a great lineup of instructors, as we do every year, including Alex Newman, who's an author, journalist. Excellent. Professor Willie Soon, who I took, he came over to my house to go do some shooting with his children the other day. Willie's one of the top atmospheric scientists in the world, and he comes with his whole family. And we have a great lineup of activities. Mrs. Edith Kraft runs the youth program. We have a special program for 5 to 11 years. Actually, we have two now, right? We're breaking it down from 5 to 7 and then 8 to 10, whatever. So anyway, visit our website, campconstitution.net, our YouTube channel. We're going to videotape this. It will be on our YouTube channel and probably some others. So without further ado, I first met this gentleman in the old JBS Belmont headquarters in the bookstore, and I literally bumped into him. He was holding a bunch of books. Oh, excuse me. I didn't formally meet him until about maybe 8 or 9 years later, but Jim is the author of Shadows of Power, and I should hold a copy of your book.
It's behind you there. I think it's the second book under the COVID.
Okay. Yeah. I want to show these great books. Shadows of Power, I think, was your first book, 1988.
Correct.
And this book, I tell people that if you want to really know what's going on in the world, in this country, you have to understand groups like the Council on Foreign Relations. And Jim will tell you about his background. He used to be a 60s leftist, so there is. And he also wrote a great book on the evolution issue, Tornado Through a Junkyard, which is on the table, and then The Case Against Darwin. But this one, he's going to be talking about his most recent one and most important one, the COVID-19 and the agenda to come, Red Pill. And he is a native of Lexington. Married for many years originally, and has one child who is now a young man, and he's been an instructor at our camp over the years. So let's give a nice warm hand.
Amen.
Thank you very, very much. As Hal was mentioning, I have been a speaker at Camp Constitution for a number of times, although it's the first time in a while. And I was really going to speak in March, but due to circumstances beyond our control, we had to cancel that. Then I was going to give this on April 15th, but I recently got diagnosed with kind of a serious illness. It's nothing contagious, but the only date they could do the test on was April the 15th. We had to cancel that one, but Hal was kind enough to reschedule for today, which is April 23rd. And that's why I want to thank you for any of you who rearrange your schedules to come out today. Now, as Hal has mentioned, I've written a few books on world government, and the first was Shadows of Power over 30 years ago. Last March, I was working on a sixth book. It's about 9/11, and some of you may know that there's still a lot of unanswered questions about 9/11. This is going to be a huge book. I spent a lot of months on it, but I dropped that book completely when the COVID crisis hit, because and besides being a writer, I was a registered nurse in Massachusetts for 45 years. I retired in 2019, right before the COVID crisis hit. And as a nurse, I immediately saw that things were happening. And Dr. Fauci was saying things that didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, we were quarantining healthy people, and in the history of this country, we've never quarantined healthy people before. Yeah. And so I wrote a long blog post for my website on COVID, but as more data came in refuting the official story, I kept making the online post longer, and then it was getting too long to be a blog post that people would want to watch. So I said, you know what, I got to turn this into a book. So I worked for almost 3 months flat out to make this book, COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come, Red Pilled. And one thing I made sure in writing this book was that everything was documented. Because you know, if you contradict the official narrative of COVID, the first word out of people's mouths is, where'd you get that information? So every statement, every statistic, every quote in my book is documented, and you can go to the original source and find it. And the book is not that long. It's 207 pages. It's 27 chapters. And as you can imagine, those chapters are pretty short, maybe 4 to 7 pages long on average. And I also put an index at the end of the book because I don't know about you, but I find that books without an index, they aren't nearly as useful as books that have them. And then the next question was, how was I going to publish this book? And I had a couple choices. I could use a regular printer, or I could use Amazon's print on demand, which is really efficient. You can upload the book, and the next day it's available worldwide. But I knew that Amazon was censoring books, so I said, I'm going to do both. I'm going to upload it to Amazon, I'm going to get my own printer. And so I uploaded to Amazon, and to my astonishment, they didn't censor it out of the gate. I thought they were going to. And 3 days after I uploaded the book, I got an email from Japan from a guy who had already read it in Japan. That's how good Amazon's distribution is. And it was doing great on Amazon. They sold over 3,500 copies in less than 2 months. And it's getting great ratings. Number one bestseller in lung and respiratory diseases. Five stars. Then I said, well, it's selling so well, I better make it into an ebook, right? Let's make this thing as available as possible. So I hired the best digital book conversion company I could find, and we worked flat out for 4 days, and I made sure that every hyperlink was active and working. And then October 15th, the evening before I was going to upload it onto Amazon Kindle, to make it an Amazon Kindle book, I got an email from Amazon, and they said that we're temporarily removing your book from sales because you never specified certain overseas rights to publish this book. And I knew that was false because you actually cannot use their online system without specifying all your rights. The system will freeze up until you do it. And I've got the screenshots to prove that I did specify my rights. But they said you have to re-upload your book and specify your rights. So I was trying to do that, but they were blocking the book from me, so I couldn't get in there to do that. Never follow their instructions, and I finally figured a way to sneak around the block. But by the time I'd done that, I had a second email from Amazon. This is 2 hours after the first, and now they gave me a totally different reason for removing the book. They said, we're permanently removing your book because you violated our content guidelines. And since everything in my book is documented with quotes from virologists and epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists and frontline ER doctors and even Nobel Prize winners, and I know that Amazon doesn't have any medical professionals on their staff, I asked them the natural question, okay, what content guidelines did I violate? And here is their answer, quote, we've reviewed your book and found that it's in violation of our content guidelines, and we will not be offering this title for sale on Amazon. We reserve the right to determine whether content provides a poor customer experience and remove that content from sale. So I didn't name any specifics on what was wrong with the book. And by the way, Amazon customers have given this book over 50 ratings and reviews, 92% 5-star, 8% 4-star, and nobody, not one customer gave it 1, 2, or 3 stars. And yet they were telling their customers, we'll decide what a good customer experience is. We don't care what our customers think. Well, I'd anticipated the situation, and 4 days after the Amazon ban, my truck rolled in with my own exact same copy of the book, and I switched hats from being an Amazon uploader to being a publisher. This is not new to me. I'd done it before. And it backfired on Amazon because the censorship was picked up by a lot of alt media publications, Russia Today, American Free Press, Zero Hedge, Global Research, all carry the story of the century in my book. So my first printing sold out, my second printing sold out, and we're now into the third printing. One way that Amazon did hurt me was they were acting as distributor of the book to places like Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and other mainline companies. But I quickly went to a mainline distributor of my own choosing, and they snapped the book right away. As soon as they saw how well it had been selling on Amazon, they said, yeah, we'll take your book. So it quickly got back onto Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and other places. And since it's being videotaped, I'll just mention that if you have to be overseas and you're watching this, if you're in Canada, you can get it at Indigo, which is Canada's largest bookseller. If you're in the UK, you can get it at the UK's Book Depository. And if you're anywhere in the world, you can get it at the UK Book Depository. And they ship worldwide for free, which is pretty amazing. In the meantime, I had another decision to make, which was, what do I do with my digital book? Because Amazon's not going to take it. And I thought, well, I could upload it into Shopify and charge people something for that, but I just had to forget it. The world is really in trouble, and it's really in trouble. So I said, I'm going to make this a free ebook. Now, I already had it in Mobi format, which works with Kindle, and EPUB, which works with a lot of devices. And then one of my readers was kind enough to make it into a digital PDF. And so I offer those on my website for free. I had to build a new website because my old website was jamesperloff.com was under attack. So I had to build a new website, jamesperloff.net, on independent servers. But you can get the book for free digitally. You can download it directly from the site or just email me, use the contact form, and I'll email you a copy of the book. And I don't know how many we've given away, but I'm sure it's in the thousands at this point. Now, but let's get on to COVID itself. Again, my book is in 27 chapters. It's got five parts, and the first part is on the lockdown. And I want to start with the lockdown because the lockdown is the least debatable, the least theoretical of what's happened. You can't debate the stats on what's been happening. We have tens of millions of people out of work, hundreds of thousands of small businesses closed. Reuters said last year they were already estimating 28 million homeless because people can't pay rents and mortgages. And how can that be healthy, to be out on the street and homeless? That doesn't even begin to make sense. And the suicide rates, the child abuse rates, the drug abuse rates have all been skyrocketing. This is interesting. Before the lockdown, you know what the American Psychological Association said the number one cause of stress was in America? Money problems. Imagine how much that's been multiplied since the lockdowns. I also have a section on the health impact of the lockdowns. You know, cancer screenings, heart disease screenings have gone ignored because of COVID. I had a surgery I was scheduled for last year. It had to be delayed by months because COVID was the only thing that mattered. And then there's a civil liberties impact. You know, Benjamin Franklin said those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Now, we've seen the Bill of Rights totally eroded. We have no right to peaceably assemble. We lost our freedom of worship. You know, last year, I don't think it was a coincidence, they announced a lockdown right before Easter. And that was the first time, to my knowledge, that Easter had been canceled globally since Christianity had been legalized in the 4th century by Constantine. And then how about the right to a trial by jury? Can't have jury trials for the most part now because that violates social distancing. They haven't abolished it, but they're acclimating us to getting rid of that. And freedom of speech, as many of you know, the tech giants are cracking down and you can't speak out. And so the whole Bill of Rights is being thrown away. And here in Massachusetts, by the way, Charlie Baker is basing this, his right to do this, on a 1950 law that was passed by the Massachusetts legislature because the Soviets had exploded their first atomic bomb in 1949. And they said that the governor could have temporary emergency rights in the case of a Soviet nuclear attack. That's what he's using as his justification. But the Constitution remains the supreme law of the land. Well, also in my book, I have a chapter where medical experts and scholars speak out against the lockdown. I have many examples. I'm just going to give you one. This is Sukrat Bhakti, emeritus professor at Johannesburg University in Mainz, Germany, and for more than 20 years, head of the Institute for Medical Microbiology there. And here's what he says. This is what he said last year. Quote, we have, speaking about Germany, we have 10,000 infections reported. 99.5% have no or only mild symptoms. These adopted measures are actually senseless. They're grotesque, absurd, and very dangerous. The life expectancy of millions is being shortened. The horrifying impact on the world economy threatens the existence of countless people. The consequences on medical care are profound. All these measures are leading to self-destruction and collective suicide based on nothing but a spook. Sorry, I'm just going to grab my drink from over here. Now, I also have a chapter on a pretty important subject, which is masks and social distancing. And in my book, I quote Professors Carl Hannigan and Tom Jefferson of Oxford University. They examined 172 studies related to social distancing. They couldn't find one study that justified social distancing for COVID. And if anybody thinks they're wrong, they're absolutely free to write to Hannigan and Jefferson at Oxford and tell them they missed a study. But this man is Dr. Gerald Evans. He's a medical director of infection control at Kingston, Ontario Health Sciences Center. He's an epidemiologist. He says this, quote, to get infected with this virus, you have to be in close contact with another person, and that contact has to be for a significant amount of time. It's not 10 or 15 minutes, it's hours. It needs to be in a closed environment, and in the environment, there has to be a significant amount of contamination, end quote. In other words, you're not going to get COVID, one healthy person passing another healthy person at Wegmans. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. As far as masks go, the COVID virus is so tiny that to see parts of it, you need an electron microscope. It's going to go right through a mask. And then masks do lower your oxygen level to below OSHA safety standards. You know, OSHA says you shouldn't be breathing in a work environment with oxygen less than 19.5% environmentally. But when you wear those masks, your oxygen levels drop to 17 to 18%. And there's documentation of that. And plus, you're rebreathing carbon dioxide. And I wanted to play a little clip. This is from a doctor who identified himself early in the clip.
I'm just so blown away by this. I've seen this already so much, it's not even funny. And I need you to understand that the system is set up to kill people right now. I just got the phone with a patient of mine. Her grandson, her daughter, and the pediatrician that takes care of this kid. This is a four-year-old little boy that got rushed to the emergency room last night because he was having shortness of breath, wheezy, and cough. Guess what he has? This four-year-old has a bacterial infection in his lungs because of prolonged mask use. He's four. He's 4 years old, and this kid almost died because of the stupid-ass, ignorant restrictions that there's no science behind. And the reason why there's no science behind it is because wearing these masks, especially for children, on a prolonged exposure can hurt you. We're seeing these reports happening all over the country. And by the way, the pediatrician confirmed it. So did they at the emergency room. This four-year-old got an overexposure to bacteria because we breathe negative bad bacteria. Toxins come out of our body, out of our mouth, out of our skin, out of our bowels, and out of our urine. That's how we detox our body. We've got to get the bad stuff out. It comes out of our breath. Guess what? This four-year-old had a bacterial respiratory infection and almost died. They thought that this kid wasn't going to make it. Thank God the hospitals were able to help him. But I wonder how many people right now are having these symptoms of bacterial respiratory infections and they think it's COVID. And they're going to the hospitals and getting hooked up on IVs and all this other kind of stuff that's going on. This is unbelievable. Four-year-old, this grandmother, this lady called me. I've known her for over a decade. She says, Dr. Eric, you're not going to believe this. I've got my daughter and the pediatrician on the phone with me right now. My grandson almost died last night because he got a bacterial infection from wearing his mask too much. This is not okay. This has got to stop.
We have a lot of studies showing that masks don't work. This is a recent one. New Daniel study finds masks don't protect wearers from COVID infection. Here's a study of 25,000 children in Germany. 68% of parents report alarming psychological and physical problems in a first-of-its-kind study. And by the way, they're making kids wear masks because even though kids don't get sick with COVID, at least until now, okay, I don't know what's got them in the future. If they release some bioweapon or something, maybe that'll change. But right now, kids don't get COVID. And yet they can't even speak to each other at lunch. And supposedly they have to wear masks because they might pass it on to grandma. Well, check this out from the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom. Experts cannot find a single child under 10 who has passed on coronavirus to an adult despite a huge trawl of data. Here's a study from China, COVID-19 study of almost 10 million finds no evidence of asymptomatic spread, media quiet. University of Florida, researchers find no asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic spread. And there are other studies I've seen just coming out this week. By the way, as I mentioned, we have a big problem with children being humanly trafficked, right? It makes it a lot harder to find a kidnapped child when they've got a mask over their face.
Yeah.
The next section of my book talks about how the fake panic was created. And I have several chapters there. I just want to put out a disclaimer, by the way. I'm not trying to say that COVID doesn't exist or that people haven't died from it. But what I am saying is that there has been, at this point, a great deal of exaggeration. Now, Donald Trump shut down the country on Friday the 13th of March of last year, but 2 weeks later, here were the actual stats, just from the Worldometer site, 21,000 deaths from coronavirus, but 113,000 from flu, 228,000 from malaria, 390,000 from HIV, so many other causes of death that are more significant, yet our government's not taking any steps to stop them. I also have a chapter on fake news in the mainstream media. And I'll just give you one example because of the time situation. This is the bottom picture was taken by Sky News of an Italian emergency room. Then CBS News took that picture on March 25th and put it on their news channel saying there's a New York emergency center. And there's so many examples like that, but you know, the fact checkers don't go after them. They just go after those of us who are trying to spread the truth in the alternative world of journalism. Now, another thing that threw America off was false predictions on computer models, especially coming from this guy, Neil Ferguson, of Imperial College in London, which received millions and millions of dollars from the Gates Foundation last year. Now, this guy had a horrible track record. In 2002, he predicted that up to 50,000 people would die from mad cow disease, but in reality, there were 177 deaths. In 2005, he predicted 200 million deaths from bird flu. The real number was 282. In 2009, he predicted 4 million would die from swine flu, but the actual number was 18,500. And it turns out his prediction for coronavirus overestimated the death rate by a factor of more than 130. And yet that's what Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci used to convince Trump to shut down the nation. His computer model was the primary source for that. I also want to, another thing that inflated the death rates, there were very scary headlines about Italy, which claimed that 8 to 10% of people were dying from coronavirus, but then Bloomberg came out with a report, which I quote in my book, and Bloomberg noted that the Italian government admitted that more than 99% of those deaths were people who had advanced cancer, advanced lung disease, or advanced heart disease, and the average age was 79.5. So it wasn't like the Black Plague was sweeping young people in Italy. And I also quote a very eminent Italian politician, Vittorio Sgarbi, in my book, who denounces the fraud. I also want to quote, just to help supplement this, Professor Klaus Puschel, head of forensic medicine in Hamburg, said this last year, quote, "In Hamburg, not a single person who was not previously ill has died of the virus. All those we've examined so far had cancer or chronic lung disease or heavy smokers or severely obese, suffered from diabetes or had cardiovascular disease. The virus was the last straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. COVID-19 is a fatal disease only in exceptional cases, but in most cases is a predominantly harmless viral infection." And some of you have probably seen Dr. Scott Jensen, who's been very outspoken on the abuse of death certificates. Mm-hmm. He was given instructions by the CDC that made it very, very lenient to include COVID-19 on the death certificate. And here's just one of the quotes from the CDC. COVID-19 should be reported on all the death certificates for all the death incidents with the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. And assumed. Dr. Jensen was outraged by this. He says they've always emphasized that death certificates should emphasize preciseness and specificity. But actually, real death rates were increased by certain governors, such as Mario Cuomo down in New York, by sending patients with sick with COVID into nursing homes. And I want to point out just one example of the non-logic that goes along with COVID. Now, Governor Cuomo would not allow healthy family members to visit grandma and grandpa in the nursing home, healthy ones, because they might spread COVID to grandma and grandpa. And yet, he took people who are coughing and feverish and sick with COVID and sent them into nursing homes, causing thousands of deaths. This makes no sense. Now, again, I was a registered nurse for 45 years. Mostly I worked bedside med-surg nursing, but I did work some in nursing homes. Let me just tell you what the protocol was. A nursing home is set up to help the elderly with things like eating and bathing and dressing, and if they're fortunate, they'll have some entertainment and some religious services. But our protocol was, if a patient got a fever in the nursing home, with the doctor's permission, we would send them to the hospital, where they'd be worked up to get a urine sample, a chest x-ray, find out what the cause of the fever was, get some IV fluids and antibiotics for a couple of days, maybe 3 days, come back to the nursing home. nursing homes are not set up to handle acutely ill patients. And I can tell you that, I can't speak for all nursing homes, but for the most part, the ratio of nurses' aides is low. Mm. And nursing homes are not set up for isolation. They don't have the equipment, they don't have the isolation rooms, or even the training to deal with it. And I quote doctors in my book, they don't call Cuomo a murderer, but they don't come very much short of that. Also, this PCR test, now this is a woman, San Antonio. Now they take this long swab, stick it up way up your nose, and rub around the membrane to your brain. This woman actually had her brain membrane punctured and leaked cerebrospinal fluid. This makes no sense. I mean, what it is about the COVID that makes it locate up there? You know, I've given samples before from my nose. They swab the lower part of your nose, you cough into a cup. But what's this business of going back to the brain membrane? It makes no sense. Another thing about the PCR test, it was invented by this man, Kerry Mullis. He won the Nobel Prize. Kerry Mullis had pointed out that PCR tests cannot determine if you're sick, that you have a disease, or that you are infectious. All it shows, it magnifies viral fragments, and it shows that at some point your immune system came in contact with a particular virus, but it doesn't mean you're sick with it. It doesn't mean you can pass it on to anybody. And I quote a number of doctors. He died conveniently in August of 2019, right before COVID hit, he died. But I quote a number of other scholars who speak out on this very fact that the test is completely meaningless. And yet, how many people are quarantined for 14 days because they had a positive PCR test? And even people in some states, if they're just in the same room with that person, even though they're all healthy, they have to be quarantined for 14 days too. Again, no logic, no science behind this. I also have a chapter in my book on theories about COVID-19, because there are different theories. And of course, the mainstream version is that there was this food market, a wet food market in Wuhan, China, that was serving bat soup, and the virus jumped from bats to people. Well, it turns out that wet food market wasn't serving bat soup. And also the Chinese, although some of the early infected people in China were going to that market, they never found patient zero, the first patient. So they don't know that it came from that market. What is more interesting is that right near that market was China's top bioweapons lab, a level 4 bioweapons lab run by this lady, Zheng Li Shi. And Zheng Li Shi worked in America before she was running that lab at our level 3 biosafety lab in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which was using specimens from our own bioweapons supply at Fort Detrick. And they were working on making bad coronaviruses, giving them what they call gain of function, making them more lethal and more infectious, supposedly so we would be able to deal with a pandemic in the future. Then she went back to China, took all that knowledge with her to the Wuhan level 4 lab. And I'm so glad that the mainstream media picked up this story. This is from Newsweek. Dr. Fauci backed controversial Wuhan lab with U.S. dollars for risky coronavirus research. And Dr. Fauci didn't return the calls from Newsweek. It turns out he's pouring millions of U.S. Dollars into the Wuhan lab to weaponize the bad coronavirus that we're not calling COVID out, saying that was necessarily the cause of COVID. But it seems to be high on the suspect list. A number of people think that this is a bioweapon. One of them is Dr. Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus. He noted that the coronavirus, as it contains, it's a chimera, it's a hybrid. It contains elements of different viruses, including the AIDS virus. And to quote him, he says, quote, "In order to insert an HIV sequence into this genome of the COVID-19, molecular tools are needed, and that can only be done in a laboratory." And I, end quote, and I quote other bioweapons experts who reached the same conclusion. Now, one question would be, well, did it just leak out of Wuhan, or did somebody deliberately put it out there? Well, there's a lot of things that suggest it was deliberate. There were so many predictors of this in 2019. One was that in Wuhan, 2019, right before the outbreak, there were the World Military Games with representatives from the militaries of 110 countries. It doesn't mean it was from China or from America, but it would have been very possible for some country to spread a virus or a bioweapon in Wuhan. Also, I'm sure many of you have heard of Event 201, which took place in October of last year. I'm sorry, October of 2020. October of 2019. Events 201 own website says, quote, Event 201, it's an exercise, right, simulates an outbreak of a novel zoonotic coronavirus transmitted from bats to people that eventually becomes efficiently transmissible from persons to persons, leading to a severe pandemic. The pathogen and the disease it causes are modeled largely on SARS. Well, according to the British journal Lancet, SARS and COVID-19 are genetically 79% similar. So Event 201 really predicted it. But what's most chilling is they had extensive discussion about how the tech giants, Google and Twitter and YouTube, should censor anybody who comes out with a narrative contrary to the government version. And that's exactly what's been happening, exactly what they predicted. And in addition to that, in America, our government ran an exercise in 2019 called Crimson Contagion, which was about a pandemic that originates in China and how our government responds to it. On top of that, in January 2020, Netflix ran a three-part docudrama on called Pandemic. That was the name of it, Pandemic. And in this docudrama, they say that the greatest threat is people who don't want to get vaccinated. It all seemed like we were being set up. Now, I have a chapter in here, it's called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine. And actually, there's another chapter that goes into hydroxychloroquine, which is a 9th reason, and there's even more reasons coming out. But I do talk about the deep state's agenda. And a lot of you know this, without even knowing about COVID, there's always been a depopulation program. I'm sure you know about the Georgia Guidestones, many of you, which call for world population to be kept at 500 million, right? This is Ted Turner, the founder of CNN, and he said, quote, a total world population of 250 to 300 million people, a 95% decline from present levels would be ideal. Well, how do you get rid of 95% of the people in the world? You're going to have to kill them, right? He doesn't say that, but basically it's going to require genocide to get rid of 95% of people in the world. Now, in addition to that, Zbigniew Brzezinski, he's kind of like Henry Kissinger. He has passed away now, but he's kind of like Zbigniew Brzezinski. He's one of those guys, he's always there, and he's would always be advising presidents, and he'd never go away. Well, he gave a talk in 2008 to the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which is the British counterpart to the Council on Foreign Relations, and he talked about how hard it was to control people now because they're getting all so much information off the internet. And he had a very chilling quote. He said, quote, today it's infinitely easier to kill a million people than to control a million people. And that quote is on tape. Perhaps most telling for COVID-19 was the remark by the very recently passed away Prince Philip, who famously said in 1988, quote, in the event that I'm reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation. And there's there's so many quotes like this, and we've known about this for years, but now they're really kind of coming to the fore. But the number one guy in all of this has to be Bill Gates. Bill Gates, the media constantly turns to Bill Gates, and he tells the world how we should respond to the pandemic, or so-called pandemic. And the thing is, he has no medical credentials. He's not a doctor, he's not an epidemiologist or a virologist, he has no credentials. But do you ever see a people in the media challenge him on his credentials? That'll be the first question in my mouth. Why is a computer geek telling us, building vaccine factories and telling us what we should be doing? Now, a few things about Bill Gates. His father, according to him himself, was a director of Planned Parenthood, the largest provider of abortions in America. His foundation has bought 5.3 million shares of Crown Castle International, which is a major provider of 5G. If you know anything about 5G, there's a lot of questions about its health impact from electromagnetic radiation. They also bought 500,000 shares of Monsanto, which not only makes genetically modified food, but also spread glyphosate, which is a cancer-causing weed killer throughout the world. He's also invested in lab-grown meat, and he recently went on record saying we should stop eating beef, we should eat lab-grown meat instead. He doesn't like women breastfeeding their babies, so he invested in a company called BioMilk, which creates artificial breast milk. And this is all from mainstream media news, by the way. He's also got a plan to block the sun. He wants to, could dimming the sun save the earth? Bill Gates wants to spray millions of tons of dust in the stratosphere to stop global warming. You know, anything that's natural, whether it's sunlight, your genes, your food, the mother's breast milk, he doesn't like anything natural. It's got to be artificial for him to be happy. And but perhaps the most important thing is his role as a eugenicist, and I'm sure many of you heard this quote from a 2010 TED talk he gave. He said, quote, "The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, and reproductive health services, which really sounds like a code word for abortion, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Personally, I have a feeling he has more than 10 or 15% in mind, but that's as much as he'll admit to publicly. Now, how do you know he's not sincere? You know, I've seen many interviews with Bill Gates. I've never seen him say something like, you know, to be healthy and resist COVID, you gotta have a healthy lifestyle. You gotta eat right, exercise, get sunshine, you know, get build up your immune system, have, you know, get some vitamin C into you. You ever hear him say anything like that? No, the only way to get well, according to him, is to take one of the vaccines that he's invested in. Now, as to why we don't need a vaccine, there are many, many reasons. First of all, last year, the CDC reduced its death rate all the way down to 0.26%. That's of people who have the infection. Now, bear in mind, Dr. Birx, Deborah Birx, the emergency response coordinator, admitted that anybody with any other condition like cancer or a heart attack, if they tested positive for COVID, was counted as a COVID death. So this is still a highly inflated death number, but your chances of surviving COVID, according to the CDC, 99.74%. And according to a Stanford study, your survival rate is much higher. In fact, if you're between the ages of 20 and 49, if you really analyze the CDC stats, your chances of surviving COVID are 99.95%. So why do you need a warp speed vaccine if you have no, you know? It's like if the weatherman said, you know, there's a 99.95% chance it can be sunny today, would you put up an umbrella and, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Now, another reason why we don't need a vaccine was articulated by this man who I quote in my book, is Stefano Montanari. He's an Italian nanopathologist, a very eminent scientist. And he said that when he was in college, one of his professors was one of the most famous scientists in the world. And he said, if I had ever proposed a COVID vaccine, I would have been kicked out of his class. Why? Because a coronavirus vaccine. A coronavirus is one of the causes of the common cold. Why do we never get immune to the common cold? Because it's constantly mutating. Yeah. You never get rid of the common cold, nor has anybody ever made a vaccine for it. So he said that's nonsense because coronavirus is going to keep mutating, so you're going to need more vaccines and more vaccine. It'll just be an endless process. It makes no sense whatsoever. Also, our research at Northwestern have found there's a tremendous correlation between vitamin D deficiency and COVID deaths. So if your vitamin D levels are adequate, very unlikely you're going to die from it. Also, and this, I have actually a whole chapter on hydroxychloroquine in my book, but this is Didier Raoul, one of the most eminent microbiologists in the world. He did a study in France, and this was on over 1,000 patients who had COVID, and he found that by using hydroxychloroquine with an antibiotic, azithromycin, that well over 90% survived. But then in America, combining hydroxychloroquine with zinc, we got about 100% success rate. Anthony Cardillo, I quote him from Texas, Cardillo from Los Angeles, Yvette Lozano from Texas. Brian Tyson, California doctor, has successfully treated 1,700 coronavirus cases using hydroxychloroquine, not one death. And by the way, the prescription costs less than $20. So why are we talking about vaccines? And now another one, ivermectin has come out. Ivermectin is another very inexpensive medication that is very successful. There's also the factor of, do these vaccines include undisclosed ingredients? Now, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's the son of the assassinated senator and the nephew of the assassinated President John F. Kennedy. And as an environmental attorney, he's become very active in the battle against Bill Gates and Fauci. And I just want to quote, this is a direct quote. In 2010, Gates committed $10 billion to the World Health Organization, promising to reduce population in part through new vaccines. In 2014, Kenya's Catholic Doctors Association accused the WHO of chemically sterilizing millions of unwilling Kenyan women with a phony tetanus vaccine campaign. Independent labs found the sterility formula in every vaccine tested. After denying the charges, WHO finally admitted it had been developing the sterility vaccine for over a decade. Now, the reason that doctors in Africa got suspicious was, if you're familiar here in America, you usually get a tetanus shot once every 10 years. They were giving these women three, and they were targeting women of childbearing age. They said, this doesn't make any sense. That's why they sent it off to independent labs, and they found it. And by the way, in case you think that this is just a conspiracy theory, here is the NIH, which is Dr. Fauci's own organization, and they had an article, anti-fertility vaccines. This is published in 1989, and if you read down here, it says vaccines are under development for the control of fertility in males and females. Vaccines inducing antibodies against the human chorionic gonadotropin, that's HCG, that's the hormone that allows women to ovulate and produce eggs, have gone through phase one trials with satisfactory results. So if there's no conspiracies, this is straight from Dr. Fauci's NIH back in the 80s, or already developing these vaccines. So the question to me, though, is if they did not tell these women in Africa that they had this sterility formula in the vaccines, so what other things are not being disclosed in these mRNA vaccines they're giving out? And the mRNA vaccines, which have never been used on humans before, have not gone through the several years of safety trials that are normally required. They create a new protein that's supposed to stimulate your body's cells to make a protein, so that COVID will make antibodies to it. Now, this guy here is Tal Zaks. He is the chief science officer at Moderna, which is right over here at Cambridge, and one of the five big COVID vaccine companies now. And I want to just play a little clip. He talks about what they're actually doing at Moderna.
I'm here today to tell you that we're actually hacking the software of life, DNA. And that it's changing the way we think about prevention and treatment of disease. So here's all the biology you need to know in 30 seconds. Our body is made out of organs. Our organs are made out of cells. And in every cell, there's this thing called messenger RNA, or mRNA for short, that transmits the critical information from the DNA, our genes, to the protein, which is really the stuff we're all made out of. This is the critical information that determines what a cell will actually do. And so we think of it like an operating system. And so if you could actually change that, which we call the software of life, if you could introduce a line of code or change a line of code, it turns out that has profound implications for...
Okay, so this is a screenshot from Moderna's own website. It says, our operating system, recognizing the broad potential of mRNA science, we set out to create an mRNA technology platform that functions very much like an operating system on a computer. Brings to mind Bill Gates, right? It is designed so that it can plug and play interchangeably with different programs. In our case, the program or app is our mRNA drug, the unique mRNA sequence that codes for a protein. So they're really talking, and I've seen some of these mRNA scientists talking about how the genetic code is outdated, you know, it's so old because they're using the Darwinist model, but it's created by God. Obviously, God knew what he was doing, but they're acting as if they were smarter than God. By the way, you think that Tal Zaks, the guy who I just showed you, is only in this for humanitarian purposes. Here's financial news from last October. Selling stock like clockwork, Moderna's top doctor gets $1 million richer every week. And he sold already sold $50 million worth of stock last October. It must be a whole lot higher than that by now. Now, a number of doctors have been calling out Moderna and these other mRNA producers. Dr. Dolores Cahill, PhD immunologist, full professor at Dublin University in Ireland, former official health advisor to the EU, and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, MD, who's been studying vaccine for years, have talked about the potential dangers in the future for people who are getting the vaccine. That normally when you get a flu, it'll localize in your throat, right? Or maybe your nose, and your immune system will attack it. Well, now with these mRNA vaccines, you're having this protein produced throughout your body. Now your body is going to start recognizing this foreign protein. And Dr. Tenpenny points out that even though your when you get the mRNA shot, the protein may be attacked and destroyed by the immune system. There's still going to be some of that mRNA hanging around. And in the future, when you encounter a new coronavirus, all of a sudden it may mass produce these proteins, and your whole body, as Dr. Cahill puts it, your entire body could come under organ failure. So there are real dangers here on having this briefly tested, entirely experimental vaccine being used in the public. But just to show you some things that are already happening, and you won't see this in the mainstream, we have 20, this is from January the 12th, 24 dead in New York nursing home, days after getting COVID vaccination. January 15th, 23 reported in Norway, dead after taking Pfizer's COVID vaccine. January 26th, this is a good video to watch. This is a 10-year certified nursing assistant. He is a Christian lay preacher who's been at his nursing home for a long time. He truly speaks from the heart and literally resonates. But he says that people at his nursing home have been dying like flies since the vaccine, and that none of them previously had COVID. And he also says that if they aren't dying, they're losing function, or the ability to walk, talk, eat. February the 1st, 7 die at Spanish nursing home. All 78 tested positive for COVID after getting the COVID vaccine, yet none of the residents had the disease prior to vaccination, and also several staff members fell ill after vaccination. February the 4th, 3 young Italian medical professionals dead after Pfizer's mRNA shots. February the 9th, the Daily Mail in the UK reported that at least 36 people had developed a rare blood disorder. I'm sure it's higher now, thrombocytopenia, including a doctor who died after the COVID vaccines. February the 12th, a 40-year-old Greek nurse was paralyzed after the mRNA shot. Hospital administrator was prosecuted for reporting it. February the 14th, whistleblower in Germany reported that 8 out of 31 seniors at a German nursing home were dead within 4 weeks of COVID vaccination. All had been physically healthy prior to that. February the 15th, 46 residents of a nursing home in Spain, after receiving their first dose of the Pfizer, were dead. Spanish media reported it, American media did not. February 23rd, Netherlands report 22 nursing home residents dead within 2 weeks of first mRNA shots. March the 1st, 3 dozen cases of spontaneous miscarriages, stillbirths occurring after COVID vaccination. March the 1st, it's reported that the vaccine death rate for Israel's elderly is 40 times above COVID. So in other words, the vaccine is 40 times deadlier than the disease itself that it's supposed to cure. Then Reuters reported March the 7th, one Austrian nurse dead, another developed pulmonary embolism after the AstraZeneca vaccine. This is ironic. March the 9th, Australia's health minister, Greg Hunt, was hospitalized in critical condition 1 day after the COVID vaccine. March the 11th, Denmark, Estonia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, and Latvia suspended the AstraZeneca vaccine after potentially fatal blood clots. There's so many more to report, but this just came in this week. 2-year-old baby in Virginia dead 6 days after second experimental Pfizer mRNA shot. Now, babies are not dying from COVID. Yeah. So why are you running trials on babies and killing them when they're not even subject to COVID in the first place? Now, there's something else that has to be mentioned. I'm pretty close to done, but in addition to the death that comes from this, and I just want to mention to you, by the way, if you do have side effects and you are interested in alternative approaches, America's frontline doctors have licensed professionals in every state, including Massachusetts. They can provide you with hydroxychloroquine, high dose, and they probably are providing ivermectin now too. Yeah. So if you are, I've contacted myself, you fill out a form, and their own pharmacy will send it to you. So I just want to know that there is hope on that. We need to get digital ID right. This is the other part of this. Bill Gates is funding something called the ID 2020 Alliance. His goal is that everybody on the planet should have a digital ID. Yeah. And he's saying this will make the world financial system inclusive. Everybody will be part of the same payer system, will all have a digital ID. What he's not telling you is that if everybody becomes part of a single system and now can become exclusive and then exclude anybody that they don't like. Now here's a screenshot from ID2020's partner page, because he has Gavi, which is the alliance between nations and pharmaceutical companies that Bill Gates set up, as well as Bill Gates, Microsoft, and our old friends at the Rockefeller Foundation, who are still involved in all of this. Also, Bill Gates said, this I think is more than a year ago, if you look at the bottom part of this, I said, eventually we'll have some digital certificates to show who has recovered or been tested recently, and when we have a vaccine, who has received it. Now, at that time, in my book and other people in alt media were predicting, they're going to have vaccine passports. They're not going to let you go or travel or work or shop unless you've got a vaccine passport. We're laughed at and said it was a conspiracy theory. Now it's happening. ID 2020 has now introduced the Good Health Pass Collaborative. In New York, now they have the Excelsior Pass, which provides proof of COVID-19 vaccination and or negative test. Here's the Boston Globe. Planning to celebrate your vaccination with a night out at the movies or a dinner or a day at the ballpark? You might need to bring your passport, vaccine passport. That is, it's becoming reality. What they laughed at before is now becoming reality. Now, I think there's a very good time to bring up the Book of Revelation.
Yes.
Which said, and the second beast required all people, small and great, rich or poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on the right hand or on their forehead, so no one could buy or sell unless they had the mark. Now think about it. Yeah. Right now, nobody in Massachusetts can buy or sell at a supermarket unless you've got a mask. It's a small step from that to the vaccine passport, which the Boston Globe is already talking about, which will be on your smartphone probably. But then it can go to be a mark on you because your smartphone can get stolen, right? Now this from Rice University School of Bioengineering. I think this is a pretty important quote. Quote, Kevin McHugh, an assistant professor of bioengineering at Rice since the summer and a team at his previous institution, MIT, reporting a cover story on the development of quantum dot tags that fluoresce with information after they're injected as part of a vaccination. The tags are incorporated in an array of sugar-based microneedles on a patch. When the needles dissolve in about 2 minutes, they deliver the vaccine and leave the pattern of tags just under the skin, where they become something like a barcode tattoo. So you're wearing a tattoo. Instead of ink, this highly specific medical record consists of copper-based quantum dots embedded in biocompatible micron-scale capsules. Their near-infrared dye is invisible, but the pattern they set can be read and interpreted by a customized smartphone. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to us and said, hey, we've got a real problem, knowing who's vaccinated, said McHugh. So they're moving from masks to vaccine passports, to you'll have it on your body. Now, I'm not saying that's the mark of the beast, but man, you're getting pretty close at this point. And just to show you how they're advancing this, in Africa, they're beta testing another system. Africa to become testing ground for a trust stamp vaccine record and payment system. Mm. And so what's happened is Trust Stamp, which is an AI company, is working with MasterCard, which you know is financial, and Bill Gates' Gavi Alliance, which is vaccines. So your financial records and your vaccine record will all be tied together in your digital ID. And all this is leading us to a cashless society. Now, my wife is Chinese. She's from Taiwan, not from China, but she's in China now. They're totally cashless. Even the beggars, you can't give them coins. They've got a card. You swipe their card. And they're beta testing the system for America. Now, you probably know this, in China, they have a system called social credit score. If you have a good social credit score, you can use your digital ID to shop where you want and get a good job or travel where you want. But if your social credit score is low because you were disobedient to the government, then that score declines. And that is a sign of what is probably coming to us in America. Now, the guy who's heading up this plan, The Great Reset, he's got a book called The Reset, is this guy Klaus Schwab, head of the World Economic Forum, which sponsored with Bill Gates event 201. He's talking about cashless society and what he calls the Great Reset. And by the way, people notice he dresses up in costumes like he's a villain in a James Bond movie. You know, it's like a really weird dude. But he wants a cashless society, and here's some actual propaganda from the World Economic Forum. Welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better. Huh. And the next one, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. So easy to put up. Picture of a smiling face there, right? But have we ever had a system in the world? Think about it. You know, if we don't own anything, who is going to own it? It's obviously going to be the state, right? The state will run everything, own everything. And the state is controlled by the 1%, the multi-billionaires. So have we ever had a system like that before where the state owned everything and people owned nothing? What do we call it?
Communism.
Communism. That's what we're going to do. That's soft-selling communism for the future to us. Now, you may wonder, why would people accept it? Well, to get a mouse into a trap, you've got to put cheese in the trap. So what's the cheese? What they do is, so many people are out of work due to COVID. COVID is the gateway to the system. They say, well, look, we'll give you a basic allowance on your digital ID So you won't be kicked out of your home. You'll still be able to put food on the table. They won't give you a lot. And they're not getting any real money. You know, it's just like the Federal Reserve creates dollars from, prints dollars from nothing. This will just be digital money that they create from nothing. So they're not giving up a thing when they give you this. But it'll allow you to survive. But in order to keep it, you will have to be a good boy or girl and not criticize the government and always take your vaccines. And they can have more vaccines. Bill Gates is already talking about booster shots being needed because these mutations and variants, and the head of Pfizer has already said you're going to need a third shot. You can see it'll only be a matter of time before it's a fourth and a fifth. And also another way they'll induce people, you know, students have a tremendous amount of debt now, and I always felt that was part of a setup. You know, so a student comes out now, they got $250,000 in debt, they can't find a job, so they say, look, we'll forgive your debt, all you got to do is just take this digital ID. Your debt's gone. So it's very tempting.
Yes.
You can see why people would accept this system, but it makes them slaves of the state. I do want to mention this. Also, good news. I really don't like being a downer. So my last chapter in my book is called Hope and Encouragement. The first thing I say is the Bible doesn't end with the Antichrist, it ends with Christ. But I also point out that around the world, there's signs of hope. I got a book order maybe 3 weeks ago from a couple in California. They said that months earlier people would ridicule them, call them conspiracy theorists. They said that everybody we talk to now in California, they're not in their heads, they're agreeing. People are waking up. And in the final chapter, I quote athletes, law enforcement officials, government officials, actors, more doctors, people around the world are waking up, religious leaders are waking up to the fact of what's really going on. And so there is reason to be hope, both in God and in our own capacity to resist what's happening. And just one clarification I wanted to make. Those of you who saw this presentation, if you buy my book, you may say, hey, you know, I saw a quote in your presentation, it wasn't in your book. That's because it came out after the book was published. But if you go to my website, jamesperloff.net, and you hover over COVID book, and you go down to COVID book updates. I've got about 150 updates, including all of those things that were in my presentation today. So I do keep updating it online. Maybe at some point I'll update the hardback, paperback book itself, but that does take some work because you've got to change the index and the footnote numbers, things like that. So that basically completes my presentation. I do have some other books that are on sale here that Hal mentioned. And one reason I still like to sell these books is because this didn't begin with COVID. I mean, this is over 30 years ago. We're talking about world government, and we're warning people about things like population control. Truth is the Lonely Warrior is a primer on the New World Order. And then 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw is a companion book. And I also have a couple of books on Darwinism, because Darwinism helped me make me into an atheist back in the 60s. And then when I found that Darwin's theory was the house of cards, I set out to provide the scientific evidence on a layman's level that discredited that. So that please my presentation. I want to thank you so much. It's been fairly long, so.